welcome to the fifth episode of the Chain Gang podcast. Today, I'm joined by someone of great importance at the moment, Dr. Laura Owler, recently qualified, obviously working now very hard to help about this thing. How are you doing, Laura?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm surviving. I'm trying to burn off chocolate, but I'm not doing a lot to do so. So obviously you're a cyclist as well. You're a Bucks medalist. You've raced a fair amount. Obviously, from a medical perspective, where do you stand towards everything that's going on at the moment with training outdoors, etc.?
So I think it's a tricky one, and like I find myself feeling guilty whenever I go out training outside because I know that there's probably a lot of vulnerable people out there and it's kind of impossible to keep your distance. But also I think on the flip side, going outside, getting fresh air, doing exercise is so important for mental health and also to keeping fit and healthy in general. So I think in general, I've been still going out riding, maybe once or twice a week outside. I haven't been doing any stupid distances. I've been doing kind of 50 miles maximum, doing routes I know. But the government guidelines are very vague and they do kind of leave it to your own discretion. I've also discovered my love of Zwift recently. It's something I never really did before because I always thought that I loved cycling so much because I love being outside. But I've done a few Zwift races and they've been absolutely brutal, but good fun. So yeah, I think it's important to keep exercising, but just do what feels right and follow guidelines.
Yeah, and obviously Zwift racing itself, it's really come to the fore at the moment. How, as someone who's just taken up and obviously never raced on the road and, like you said, enjoyed riding outside, how do you feel about the kind of revolution that's come in the last few years? Particularly last year, BT televised the Zwift Racing British National Championships. There's big prize money on offer now. A lot of the races are going big. All the World Tour teams are racing it. Do you think there's a future in Zwift in terms of being a better alternative? There's less risk of injury, etc.?
I don't think it'll ever replace outdoor racing because, you know, I went to Flanders a couple of years ago and we did the Sportive one day and then we watched the pros the next day. And the atmosphere at the roadside, you know, seeing them fight their way up the cobbles, nothing can compare to that. Having said that, though, I found myself getting really nervous before my first Zwift race, and I found myself getting really into it and getting really competitive and really putting myself in the hurt, and like the final sprint was really exciting. So it can feel real, but it's still not the same.
But then the other aspect of Zwift is obviously the entry level becomes a lot easier in some aspects, not as in like the cycling gets worse, but the number of people you can compete against across the world is much greater than, say, at your local crit circuit. If I turned up to my local crit circuit, the fourth cat race, it, where I live at uni in Preston, everyone's training constantly in the Lake District. Yeah, so with Zwift Racing, you obviously get a wider range of riders, more evenly balanced, which kind of makes the racing more exciting in some ways.
Yeah, I agree. And it's all quite controllable. Like, you can race within your specific watts per kilo category. But then I think what's exciting about things like road racing is, yes, you're racing against people with different abilities, but say you're doing a course that ends on a climb, has a technical descent, has a really fast flat section, then you get the kind of excitement of one person is strong at one bit but not so strong at the other bits, and people attack on the hills or on the flats, whereas on Zwift it's all very controlled and almost clinical.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday Rohan Dennis won the Ineos event, which was up a mountain on Zwift, and Chris Froome came sixth, which obviously is not quite a true representation of what it would be on the road. But then we have seen, particularly talking about atmosphere, we have seen 6 days introduce Zwift racing at their events. And I'm not a big fan at all of having people race Swift inside a velodrome. But I don't know, what if you've got any opinions on that?
Yeah, I think it's a strange one. I think at the moment there's obviously no other racing going on, so it's brilliant that, you know, the big riders have these competitions to do, and, you know, little old me can do a British cycling race on a Tuesday night, just like I'd say go down to my local circuit and do a crit race on a Tuesday night normally. But I think in terms of the real cycling races, so to say, I'd much rather watch a race in a velodrome or be roadside at Flanders than watch Zwift racing. That's just me personally, though.
Well, yeah, I agree. And I've mentioned multiple times on the podcast before how much I feel like cycling needs much more of a social aspect. And the one place you do see it is, I was on the Forest of Arenberg last year at Paris-Roubaix. And when we got there 4 hours before the race came through, there were already fans set up drinking at 9 a.m. Waiting for the race. And it's a massive party. There's people with speakers everywhere. And that's what I think the sport needs. And yeah, I guess if we do switch to Zwift, you lose all of that because people are just watching from their own home and it becomes just a televised event, which isn't really the same. But yeah, it is interesting how they can go about making it more audience friendly. But I don't feel like sitting in an arena watching people riding on turbo trainers be particularly exciting.
No, I totally agree. I think if you've ever been to, you know, a big race or even things like national track champs, there's always such a buzzing atmosphere, and I don't think it could be replicated by going completely virtual.
Well, yeah, I think having watched the nationals of Zwift last year, the studios were just mainly full of like the crew from BT, which isn't really what you want from an event like that. And having spoken to Tom Sharples recently, he said the best thing about racing nationals was, as a junior, you suddenly there's full like stands, everyone's there to watch you, and it just makes it a lot more real. So I think if we do transition towards it, you lose that for a lot of riders. And people like Tom, obviously first year juniors in the GB Academy, he said he's been they're targeting the 2028 Olympics, their group. Like, they need this introduction to riding in front of big crowds. It gets them used to the pressure more, and if they're all racing on Zwift all the time, they won't get that.
Yeah, definitely.
Obviously, another thing, what with you being a doctor, and we did obviously speak to Alex, who works full-time for the NHS, not as a doctor. How I always found it really interesting, because obviously when you were studying, it's a lot of long hours, a lot of work for a lot of years. How do you find managing to fit in training with something like that? Because I know a lot of people feel they can't get into sports because they work too long, but obviously you did, and you got a lot of race points in your first year racing, I believe.
Yeah, I think there's something that I've always struggled with, and I've never quite got the balance right. So basically, I got into cycling properly in my third year of uni. I did a charity triathlon just before I started uni, and I'd bought like my first road bike for it. It was one of those yellow Carrera banana bikes, and I actually hated the cycle in that because I hadn't trained properly at all, really, and it was just really painful. But what I did love at the time was the open water swimming. So I came to uni and I fully intended to just get more into open water swimming. But I went over to the swimming club and they were like, oh no, we don't do any of that, try triathlon. And they were really friendly and through really good socials. So I joined triathlon club. And then in third year, I was given the opportunity to try track cycling, which was awesome. And I didn't quite make the team pursuit squad for the uni. I was the fifth woman that year. But then that kind of fueled me to train more and more on my bike. And actually in third year, I was really struggling with uni. I was losing a lot of motivation with uni. So cycling was my escape. And I definitely spent more time cycling in third year than I spent studying. But luckily I passed, so that was fine. But then the next year, fourth year really ramped up. So it was a lot harder to keep up the training and racing. And I ended up just kind of burning out. And then I went back to triathlon. And then this year, I've gone back to pretty much just cycling. So I think it's something that I'll never quite get right. But it's asking myself, if I don't want to do a training session, why don't I want to do it? And if I don't want to do it because I'm physically exhausted, then I don't do it. If I don't want to do it because I'm mentally exhausted, then I put my kit on and I start. And if I still don't want to do it, I turn back. But usually I find I really enjoy it when I do it. And it's about not sticking to some ridiculous training plan, but almost training on feel.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of debate within cycling, particularly at top level in recent years, with all the power meters becoming so important, about whether or not you should even train to numbers or just train to feel. And I've always, having only ever played team sports, really, I've always just done things to feel. I was always, when I played rugby, it was always play what you see. We never played patterns properly. And I always think that riding for numbers has almost weakened competition in the sport. Like, the athletes may be quicker, but they it's not as exciting. And I don't know how it is as someone of your level, and obviously someone with medical insight, is it that much better to just feel yourself and be happy in yourself rather than training for goals of numbers, which in all reality don't actually mean all that much?
So in my first year of training, I didn't have a turbo trainer, I didn't have a heart rate monitor, and I didn't have a power meter. And, you know, if the training plan said 2 hours tempo, I'd just go out and I'd ride 2 hours at a comfortable-ish pace. I think it said something on my training plan, like, when you're riding tempo, you should be able to speak three words in a row before you take a breath. So that's how I rode. And then the next year I did get a power meter and I bought gym membership. So I used the Watt bikes. And I think power can be useful for doing interval training to make sure you're pushing yourself to the right level. But at the same time, if you're feeling particularly good and you can push yourself further, then you should, and you shouldn't let the numbers stop you. And also you shouldn't be hard on yourself if you're not hitting your power, because there's so many more variables and you might just be tired from the day before or just having an off day. So I think you should use numbers, but not obsess over them.
Well, yeah, because my personal problem with numbers is when I started watching cycling in a bit, this is like when I was like 7 or 8, cycling was all about attacking and gambling with what you do. But now if we look at the Grand Tour winners in recent years, they're all riders who you sit and watch ride, staring at their power meter data, because they know exactly what power they can output for a certain amount of time, enough to win them the stage. And I just think it would be a lot nicer if we had to go into it blind. And I think people would be happier not challenging themselves like that.
Yeah, I think I agree. And like, if someone knows that their FTP is a certain amount and then they find themselves riding more than that in a race, they might then back off instead of pushing themselves. Whereas I think numbers have their place in training, but certainly in racing, I never use power except maybe in TTs.
Well, yeah, I think that's where they have their prime position, which is also why I think a lot of time trial specialist riders are now winning a lot of road races, is because they can just ride to that power. But in other situations, obviously you had your moment of fame on TV the other day as you graduated early. How do you think you'll be able to keep up with cycling as a fully qualified doctor working in the industry? Because obviously I know you can't ever possibly prevent all of this, but an injury that keeps you out of work is potentially more important than to someone who works in an office. Is there any way you think you're going to have to change what you do?
So I know a lot of junior doctors that have carried on cycle racing. So one example is Beth, who's now in New Zealand. She used to race for Bianchi. I think in terms of the training, I know it's going to be another challenge again, particularly with night shifts, which I don't cope too well with. So I think I'm going to have to keep my flexible thinking hat on and kind of adapt my training. I'm hoping to live kind of 10 miles away from the hospital, so I'm commuting 20 miles a day every day at least. And obviously I've got my turbo. In terms of racing, I still want to race. I know for a while I'm not going to be free every weekend, and I have no idea how fit I'll manage to keep, to be honest, but it is something I'm going to try and keep up. But I'm also going to try not to be in the place I was a few years ago where my entire life was just medicine and just cycling. Like, I'd like to also have a social life, be able to go on dog walks and things like that, as well as just cycling and just work. So we'll see how it goes, I guess.
Yeah, I think the balance is important. And obviously, had the same discussion with Charlotte about how she balances work and riding, because obviously there's certain people at that kind of level, and there becomes a certain point where you have to really start sustaining yourself, and you have to question if cycling becomes a feasible kind of option for you anymore. Because a lot of riders, obviously you are now a doctor, you've got quite a big career ahead there, but the riders who are younger and hoping to make it as a pro, there's a certain amount of time you can push it for with a job. And I don't know how you, as someone who knows a fair amount about mental health, and obviously you're going through the same kind of thing about looking to start supporting yourself in a full-time job, what would you say about being able to do that and managing everything together?
I think it's a tricky one. Like, it's so easy to be hard on yourself, especially if you're someone like me and a lot of cyclists, if everything's not going completely to plan and really, really well. I think it is certainly a choice you have to make. You have to choose, am I gonna take cycling as far as I can, or is it just gonna be something I do for fun? And I think you can still race and train to a relatively high level and it be something you do for fun, but there will become a point where, I don't know, like, you choose to either go all out in cycling or just carry on at the same level. And some people do, you know, quit their job later in life and give it a proper go. I can't see myself doing that. I think for me, it will always be something I do for fun. And in a way, I'm glad I got into it later on, so I didn't have to make that choice between medicine and cycling. You know, I got into cycling when I was 21, 22, something like that. So I was never, you know, that 15-year-old that had a dream of being a doctor, but was also on all the British cycling pathways and being told they could make it to the Olympics if they choose it.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the other choice that I discussed with Alex Spratt, is if you were offered the chance, potentially not with British cycling, but even with a team, to go and ride for a team full-time, perhaps a UCI team, how hard would it be for you to make that decision? Because obviously, one key example of someone with a medical degree who rides at a really high level is Kelly Murphy, the Irish. I believe she rides in the Team Pursuit team, and she rides for Story. Very strong rider, but also very, very intelligent, and has a degree in some sort of medical science. How hard would it be for you to make that decision if the right offer came?
I think a few years ago, I would have said, oh yeah, I'd drop everything and go for the offer. But I think for me, I don't think I would actually want to cycle full time, because I think you have to be incredibly lucky to make it. And I can just, I suppose this is probably me being negative, but I can just see all the ways it could go wrong. So I can see myself getting bored of cycling all the time and needing something else. I can see myself pushing myself too hard and overtraining. You know, you don't know what's going to happen. You could break your collarbone in your first race of the season and that your season be over. And I just know that that would affect me too much. So I think I'd rather, and also it's the pressure of, I'm getting paid to do this, I need to do well in every race. And it kind of, for me, I think it would take the fun out of cycling. So I think I would carry on working and turn it down and race for a local team. But that's just me personally.
Well, the other thing is, obviously, particularly in the female side of the sport at the moment, is it's not, the pathway into cycling is not really a financially stable way to go. There's only a minimum wage for 6 teams now that the UCI introduced their two-team or two-tier conference. So, like, I don't know really if for anyone it's the best choice unless it is really living the dream, because for a lot of people they could be taking quite a drastic pay cut to go and do a career which is not going to last all that long, is not really all that certain, as a, like there's no job certainty in it. I mean, for someone like you who's worked so hard to get a medical degree, I think surely it would be almost taking a backward step to take something like that.
Yeah, definitely. And it would be a really, really big risk. And much as I love cycling, it's not, it isn't the dream for me, I don't think. I think the dream for me is to eventually one day become a psychiatrist.
Yeah, and obviously that takes a lot of work, which if you were decided to drop everything, even if you only did it for 5 years or so, you would then put 5 years back on yourself, plus potentially more, and working back up to the level you were at. And it's just a big risk that you take, to take a massive pay cut like that for something which really is not all that certain, when you can still race at local crits, you can still race for teams who aren't full-time, teams who just support you with things, which I think, I guess, is the ultimate. And obviously, I think if you were offered a chance to ride for a team at sort of like the Tour Series level, would you take that?
Yeah, I think I would. Like, I absolutely love watching the Tour Series. I think it's awesome. And I would love to get up to that skill level and fitness level to race it one day. So, yeah, like, I think Tour Series, Team Series, a few national events maybe, that's the kind of level that I would aspire to be at rather than the next level.
Yeah, I think that's the level you see a lot of people with a lot of interesting careers still getting out to ride. And you get you do get to mingle with a kind of nice, varied type of rider within the peloton, because you have Breezenter, who obviously is a GB Senior Academy. You have teams like Onform, who have been known to now recently bring through a lot of strong riders. But then you also have the people who work full time, and cycling has always been a hobby. They're just good at it. And I think the Tour Series is a really nice hybrid of that. Although it's supposedly in danger, and this year is probably not going to help that. So you're obviously a fairly big advocate in terms of wanting to keep the Tour Series on.
Definitely. Yeah. And I've met, you know, a lot of the girls that race for Onform and Liv and everyone. They always say that they look forward to the Tour Series, and they're all lovely girls. And it seems like even though it's fairly serious racing, they still have a laugh. And that's kind of what it's all about for me.
Yeah, I think it also brings people out to the sport, which is always important, because they do put it in town centres and city centres. The kind of places they choose aren't always the best, but they do always have it in a town centre or a city centre, which is good for the sport. And I think it's nice to have something televised for that level, because it really does give the sport that kind of momentum, which cycling struggles with, particularly with free-to-air events. So I think it's necessary to have it, and hopefully it doesn't die. But, I mean, a lot of things are a drastic uncertainty this year with no racing and sponsors wanting their money back because they're not getting their name out there.
Definitely.
So, also, you obviously have been at university in Nottingham for 5 years. How?
Six, yeah.
6 years, there we are. I'm not a doctor, as you can tell. How good is that area for training, would you say? Because obviously, there's certain areas of the UK which seem to produce masses and masses of people who can ride at the top level. Places like Lancashire, Yorkshire, and Wales. How do you say, do you think it matters as to where you're from? Obviously, again, you're medical, you have an area of medical expertise that potentially you have more insight than I do.
I wouldn't say it's medical, but so in Nottingham, we've got Derby Velodrome nearby us, and we used to train there all the time and, you know, see the Hoob Watt Bike boys training there. So I think East Midlands is starting to produce some really good riders because we've got the Velodrome. In terms of outdoor riding, it's all right, to be honest. It's not the Lake District, but if you go south of Nottingham, it's relatively flat. Whereas if you go north of Nottingham towards the peaks, you can get out into the Derbyshire Dales relatively easily and get some nice hills in. We've got a closed road circuit just down the road at Harvey Haddon, where there's a lot of crits. There's also some decent off-road riding. So it's not, you know, amazing, but it's been fine. I've always managed to get my training in out on the roads.
Obviously, you say about having local crits. How important do you think crit circuits are? Because there's obviously a few dotted about, but there certainly is room to have more, particularly while cycling is still growing, although it seems to be plateauing at the moment. But do you think we should be looking, as infrastructure-wise with British Cycling, to build more crit circuits, or at least more multi-purpose circuits that can be used to race crits?
I think definitely. So, yeah, in Nottingham, we've got Harvey Haddon, and then Leicester was built a few years ago. And we used to have weekly crits that would include fourth cat only. Recently, there's been a lot of fourth cat only women's racing, both in Nottingham and up in Yorkshire. And I think it's absolutely fantastic. I also think the circuits themselves are really good for training on and practicing skills, like going around corners, because you don't have the worry of traffic. The only thing is, I guess, the thing is with all races all over the country is getting the race organisers. So often these circuits are built, racing goes on for a couple of years, and then someone moves away or some kind of funding's cut and the races just aren't happening and they are just sitting there. So I think it'd be great. I'd love to see more crit circuits and more beginners racing on them. And also coaching for beginners to racing, both adults and kids, or just general adults that want to commute to work, just getting them to learn kind of the skills of how to overtake someone slower than you, how to avoid a pothole, like little things like that, how to go around a corner.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think obviously where I'm from, I know you're not from far away either, the two nearest ones are probably the Lee Valley one, which is new, and Hog Hill. But I think there's definitely room for more. And the other thing I wanted to say, because you obviously mentioned the fourth cut only racing, obviously you completely blitzed the whole British cycling system in your first year to get up the licenses. But in my opinion, from what I've seen, and obviously I don't train very hard at all, which to me, someone who doesn't train very hard is what entry level should be, someone who wants to go out for a bit of fun. Whereas in cycling, I've always found if you go to a fourth cat race, because everyone has to start there, it's never actually pure entry level as to what I would call kind of grassroots racing, where you can turn up and the racing speeds are maybe like 15, 16, 17 miles an hour. They're always not, particularly in the men's, they're always a lot quicker. Do you think there's room for British cycling to expand out the categories to try and make it a bit more diverse, or is this the best they can do?
I think there is, yeah. I think particularly with men's racing, there's almost a bottleneck between fourth cat and third cat. So you end up with a lot of fourth cats in the races who are sitting on, say, 11 points, trying to get their last points. And they're at the point where they're really strong. And then maybe someone's there for their first race and they're not as strong and they get dropped on the first lap. And I think that's a massive shame. I think for women's racing, the fourth cat only races have been revolutionary, really, because a lot of us struggle with confidence and it's nice to go and be like, okay, these are going to be beginners. And with women's racing particularly, the strong women tend to move up category quite quickly. So there's less of a problem with having really strong women in fourth cat racing. I mean, my first race was actually an E1234 crit, and I held on for a bit, but it was on a technical circuit that didn't suit me at all. And I remember finishing it really demoralised because I was like, oh my God, I've been training all winter. I'm going to get dropped every race. And it took a lot of courage for me to then enter my next race where I got a top 10. But I think it is about not being discouraged if you do feel out of your depth as well. And you can race yourself fit, you know, like pushing yourself to the absolute limit once or twice a week is a really good way to get fit.
Well, yeah, and well, particularly for me, one way I've thought they really could solve the problem, because E1, 2, 3, 4 races, you don't really tend to get them at a men's level, although that's actually effectively what the Tour Series level is, because Morvello Basso last year or the year before had Cat 3 riders racing in the Tour Series as their wild card against people who'd won Olympic gold. So it's bizarre, but I've always thought, and before I knew anything about how it worked, I've always thought it would be how endurance car racing works, where the points are allocated per category. So even though the first Cat 4 might come 12th in the race, they'd still get maximum Cat 4 points. And I'm still yet to work out why British Cycling don't do that. But have you got any insight as to why you think they should or shouldn't do that?
I think that'd be good, actually. And I know there's a few races that are now... I don't think they can do points because of British Cycling, but they're doing, say, prize money for the first fourth Cat in an E1, 2, 3, 4. And I think that's a brilliant way to encourage people to race. And yeah, I think that would work, having points for different categories. Another way to do it is how they do it for the Bucks. So the university crit races is they do a handicap for the women. So the fourth Cat start, and then a minute later the third Cats, and then a minute later the E1, 2. So 2 years ago I did that, and I was a second Cat and started 2 minutes behind with Anna Henderson, Alex Clay, and a load of really strong girls, and it made for really tough racing, but it wasn't enough of a gap still. You know, Anna and Alex still jumped everyone by the second lap. But I think there are ways to do it without just putting everyone on the start line of all categories and being like, okay, top 10 get points. So yeah, I think it's something that British Cycling should think about, certainly.
Well, yeah, because that's the thing, even if they're not getting, like, I'm not saying someone who finishes like third from last but is the first fourth Cat gets 10 points, even if they get 3 points or something and then they can add on the points they'd get from finishing in the actual top 10, it means that racing in a Cat 3-4 race is not as daunting, and it's not as almost less a personal gain and more for actually progressing yourself. And I think we'd see a lot more people progress from Cat 4 that way, because, like you said, the problem with Cat 4 is you get people who are so close to moving up and end up racing in races where all the Cat 3s mop up all the points, and then they're stuck in Cat 4, making it harder for everyone else in Cat 4, which is not how grassroots cycling should work. Like, I've always said this to people, if you turned up at a rugby club or a football team and you'd never played rugby or football before, you could be playing matches within 3 weeks, training once a week. You can't do that with cycling. You have to train so hard to be able to actually get anything out of the racing, which I don't think is at all how it should be, which is why I like how the time trials work. And I think time trialing in the UK is such a big part of cycling culture, and it's really important, and it's really good that it's still as strong as it is.
Yeah, definitely. And when people are saying, oh, I really want to start cycle racing, I often say, come on a load of group rides to practice riding a group, but also enter a club 10 and just see where you're at. But I mean, I really like about cycling the fact that the more you train, the better you get, because I wouldn't say I'm naturally good at it, but because I've been training for so long and so consistently, I see the improvement. Whereas with something like running, I just seem to plateau because I just feel like I'm not built for it.
Yeah, I think it is nice as well that it does just come with full. I mean, I always notice it. Like, I didn't take my bike to university and I was there for 6 months, and I've come back and I've noticed my average speeds have dropped so drastically from what they were. That's demoralizing in itself, but you know that just riding will improve, which is a nice thing to have. It's not something we have to work on skills necessarily. So I think it is a good sport for people, because if you enjoy it, you get better at it without really having to try all that much. It's just, you get better at it. But I think definitely as well, entering races is another way to get fit, but it's just so demoralizing if you get dropped on the first lap.
Yeah, and it's definitely kind of having to come back from that. And I think I was really lucky because I had a couple of teammates with me that race, and one of them had done a few races before and the other one had done one race season before, and they were just really encouraging. Whereas I think maybe if I'd gone on my own without anyone there, I would have been so demoralized that I might not have come back the next week. So I know people say cycling's an individual sport and the same with triathlon, but it's really not. Like, it's really nice to have that sense of a team, whether you're doing team time trials and team pursuits or you're racing crits together almost as individuals, but you're still looking out for each other.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is really important to have people around you who will support you. But then again, I personally am someone who feels the cycling community is not as good and friendly as it really should be. But there is always a thing that when you turn up to a race, if you turn up to two or three races, people will talk to you. And cyclists do that. But I still feel cycling has a long way to go in terms of being as social a sport as rugby and football, where as soon as you finish a rugby game, you're in the bar with your opponents about 20 minutes later, and it's just normal and you talk to everyone and there's a lot more social aspects to it. Whereas I found cycling's a lot more of a clique, which I know once you're in it is a lot nicer. But I think if crits become more friendly as well, I think then it's definitely good for everyone.
Yeah, and I did the York Omnium last year, which was like, it was crit racing, but in an Omnium style. So there were like four races and they had like a burger van there. They were selling beers at a bar. They had music blaring out and it felt almost like a festival. And I thought that was brilliant. It was like all the parents were talking to each other, all the supporters, the race organizers' family was there. And I think more events like that would be really good rather than just, you know, a load of skinny guys in Lycra putting on some races on a Saturday. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but just, I don't know, making it more of a spectator-friendly sport and encouraging people to stick around after they've raced and support other people.
Yeah, I don't know quite where it comes from, and if it's the remnants of cycling, well, I say remnants, it still essentially is, being such a kind of elite sport in terms of it's not easy access like people think it is. People say, oh, cycling's free, but it's really not when you realize what you need. Like a entry-level road bike, and like entry-level is still going to set you back £250, which is more than it would take to buy a football and go to a park and play football. And it's always had this kind of snobbery around it whenever I've been there, that if you're not as good as people, they look down on you massively, more so than I've had experiences in other sports. And I think if we can get rid of that with events like the York Omnium, like Red Hook Criterium, that's a big social event, like 6 days, I think it'll be really, really healthy for the sport. And I think more people will want to do it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think events like Sportives, obviously proper racers often look down their noses at it. But I do think events like that are really good for getting more people into cycling, because you learn how to draft people. You get to do challenging distances on really cool routes sometimes. Like I did Ride London a few years ago and it's a really cool route. And it almost feels a bit like triathlon does. Like, I hate to mention the word, but triathlons are great because you'll show up, there'll be 500 or so people, you'll have a chat to someone before the swim, and you almost always do it knowing you're not going to come last. And no matter where you come, there's still supporters out. And it's more of a personal challenge than a race, for me anyway. I mean, I've got a friend who races triathlon quite seriously, but she says the same, like, it feels a lot less pressured than a cycling race, where if you get dropped on the first lap of a crit, it's kind of race over and it's not so fun anymore. Whereas triathlon, if you're a slower swimmer, you might overtake everyone on the bike, or, you know, you just, it doesn't feel so much like a race, more of a challenge.
Yeah, I think that's important for people to be able to do that and actually still feel their worth within the sport, which is obviously hard to do if you're barely made a dent in the race and people didn't even notice you were in it. But anyway, that's been 40 minutes. So I think that'll be it for this time. Thank you for coming and chatting to me, Laura. It's nice to get a different perspective to what we've had so far.
Thanks for having me.
That's all right. I'll be back again. I've got no idea who'll be back with. It's a complete mystery to me. So I'll see you then.